It's coming back to the present moment, being at one with yourself. So gardening can be yoga, right? When we talk, you talked about meditation. If you like to hike or rock climb or fish, like those things can actually turn into the traits that you receive in a meditation practice too.
Good day. Welcome to Ripples, Physicians Wellbeing, a space to discuss coping with stressors while training in the field of medicine and tips for overall wellness.
Learn more about the wellness home services at gmewellness.utesca.edu. And don't forget to subscribe to stay updated with new episodes, wherever you enjoy podcasts.
I'm really excited about the podcast today. We're joined by Melissa Geary. She's a yoga therapist, a mindfulness expert, because being a yoga therapist isn't enough, and also an educator. And I had the opportunity to work with Melissa over the past several months on some work that she'd been doing with the U.S. military on some injured soldiers and some of her very neat practices to bring them back to recovery. So, Melissa, welcome. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. Yes.
It's exciting to have you here, Melissa. Thank you so much.
How does yoga and mindfulness practices aid stress reduction? Certainly something we see a great deal in our residents and fellows.
Yeah, there's a lot of, when you think about yoga on the big mainstream stage, that's usually why people come to yoga, right? They want to relax. And I think when we understand the mechanics of why yoga does what yoga does, it helps people relate to these different techniques a lot more practically. And so an example of why does yoga help with stress reduction is simply when you do forward folds, you're taking your head below your heart, right? You're lowering blood pressure. You're downregulating the nervous system. When you exhale, it cools the nervous system. When we are doing practices that incorporate movement with mindfulness, so you're paying attention to what you're doing and incorporating your breath, all of that gets you in the present moment, right? Like if I were to have you move your arms at the same time with your breath and you're focusing on that, you're completely here in the present. So we're training neural patterns to keep us present. So besides all that, right, all this magic that's happening with the nervous system, it also can create really beautiful communities for people, but also tangible tools for people to take home to feel good in their bodies and befriend their bodies.
We know that yoga has become more popular, and meditation too. You know, rarely I find somebody that hasn't heard at least about meditation and mindfulness, but there are still challenges to access, you know, and barriers in general, circumstantial and access barriers. What would you do about that?
Well, it's really because we've socialized yoga and meditation. And, you know, you think about the magazine cover, it's this woman in this blissed out meditation image, which
yes.
A lot of people can't relate to that. And then you also think about yoga being socialized only in studios. So you got to be able to afford the membership or... Yeah. I've met and worked with so many people over the years who they're saying, I want to do a yoga class, but I don't want to be, you know, the one that stands out, like I'm not good enough or I don't think I can do it. So it's very performance oriented.
Yes.
So part of it is our belief around what these modalities are. That's a huge access barrier in itself. So it's re-socializing how we see this work, that it's really a human birthright. And you could go to the studio, that's great, it's nice, but that is such a small way, and that's really a Western cultural thing that we do here. Yoga is union, right? If you translate it, it means union. It's coming back to the present moment, being at one with yourself. So gardening can be yoga, right? When we talk, you talked about meditation, if you like to hike or rock climb or fish, like those things can actually turn into the traits that you receive in a meditation practice too. Like Dr. Curran had said regarding the military, you know, threading the traits of yoga into PT. So we're developing down regulation, implementing recovery, and also that proprioceptive, interoceptive relationship to the body. So it doesn't have to look like this one way,
yeah. You
know? So I really think it comes down to the way it's socialized. That's what's curated a lot of these misconceptions.
So you're telling me we don't need the t-shirt that says Om or yeah. Namaste in bed or anything like that. Good.
And what really resonates with me when you were talking about gardening or hiking is a lot of physicians run. And I know running for me, at least, has been very much of a meditative action at times.
Absolutely. I mean, when we are in relationship with our breath and we're, I mean, of course, in fitness, running, or different activities, many times people disassociate from what they're doing. And I think that this is actually a trait to why we have so many diseases and health issues in our culture is we're so disembodied. We don't use our inner referral skills. So if some people will run and they're just not really being present, but there's ways that you can just use your attention, having attention control and focus to really make it a meditative thing. So, you know, even meditation, a lot of people will get into meditation and feel disconnected to it because they're trying to achieve something. I want to share this because this is, a lot of people don't realize this. Most of the time people go, I'm bad at meditation because my mind wanders. And I always tell people, well, that's good to know you're alive. Like we need, you know, like the mind has, it's going to always be taking in social cues and data. That's part of the nature of the mind. But it's actually when your mind wanders and you notice it and bring it back to the present that you're training the neural pathways that yield all the benefits of meditation that, you know, all the research totes about. Yes. So it's, if your mind wanders, that's actually the medicine around meditation versus trying to be empty mind and forcing, creating more stress factors. So,
Which as a therapist, mental health provider, I also know that many people confuse being numb or being disassociated with that idea of I'm gonna clear my mind. No, we need to be present, we need to be here, we need to be connected and quiet the mind. Like you said, the exercise of coming back to the present is what really gives us. I have so many questions now for you. You just threw at us a lot of good information, but I got hooked in the it's a birth human right. What did you mean by that?
When we look at the neurobiology that every human carries around, right? We all have a nervous system. We all have breath, right? We need it to survive. We have a physical body, whether there may be limitations or not. The relationship we have to our body and to those aspects of us is a human birthright. Everybody has, and actually I want to zoom in a little bit because the relationship we have with it is really where the nourishment needs to happen. I think it's not a matter of let me just move my body and do these things because that's just doing more things, but cultivating a healthy relationship to our body through awareness. You know, if I look at my own edges and struggles, right, the awareness of, oh, I'm struggling or, oh, that stresses me out. Those are just notifications from the body saying, hey, look at me. Let's be in relationship. Let's regulate this. Let's do something about it. And so the human birthright is that we have a relationship to our body, but a lot of times in our culture, we are socialized out of being in relationship in our bodies, and we become codependent on these external factors that keep us disembodied.
You know, you keep talking about the nervous system in regulating and down-regulating. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I think it's one of the most important things of our times because stress-related illness is what's hemorrhaging our healthcare costs and our systems. In fact, obviously, you guys know burnout is such an issue for providers themselves. So if we look at the center of a lot of what's causing that, it comes down to how cells are behaving and the mitochondria in the cell and how that's operating through inflammation in our nervous system. You know, yoga has been shown to activate GABA response in the body, and that is how we cool off our nervous system after being stressed out. And when we're training more GABA response, that cooling of the nervous system, this is going to be anti-inflammatory and help our cells operate more happily. I like to keep it really simple. I think about our cells, like we're made up of all these cells, and you want your cells to be nourished and happy and vital. And as simple as this is, if you just do what's good for your nervous system, and you start looking at your life and the things you're doing, like, is this good for my nervous system? That right there, that perspective can really help us address stress-related illnesses and identify where we're creating more inflammation. And yoga has the natural traits to support that. Meditation, same thing. I think the big benefit of all of those modalities within mindfulness is awareness to build that relationship back to ourselves, cool the nervous system, and address those health issues.
When I hear that and about the GABA receptors, I think about the fact that so many people self-medicate themselves with things that aren't helpful to their bodies to try to achieve that same kind of place where they can relax, and ultimately they're probably doing more harm than good.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, a lot of, and we've normalized this, right? Having a glass of wine at the end of the day,
yes.
You know, wonderful. But when you're doing that in the, or in place of chilling out, cooling off, over yeah. time, your body has a hard time creating it naturally. And that's why we start craving these, in, whether it's wine or other, you know, I think about, so there's like adaptive solutions and mm-hmm. then there's maladaptive. And really the adaptive stuff is that it's inner resourced, right? And we're fueling vitality back into the body, where when it's maladaptive, it becomes very externally dependent and it can lead to burning out our system. And so it's our relationship with these external things that we're using to chill us out, whether it's social media or whatever, yes. right? Not just wine, it can be so many different things. Does that lead us to a path where we're regenerating back in ourselves, or does that create patterns that eventually burn the body out?
In social media, I don't even know how to express and communicate what it has become for many people. And I see it with my clients, with my residents, with people around me. It's being used as an external way to downregulate. You don't want to think about the stressors, so you go on TikTok and you watch one video after the other, but that is just creating this false sense of, you know, calm and relaxation and grounding. You need to bring it from
and isolation
within.
Isolation,
yeah, because yes. on top of that, you disconnect not only from your body, you disconnect from the people around you, from your community.
Well, yeah. it's also cultivating disembodiment, because you're so in your mind, you're not actually paying yes. attention to what's happening in your body. I heard a study once that said they compared the experience of someone comparing themselves on social media, like, you know, that stalking, like you're looking at something and, you know, and you're stalking somebody and you're feeling bad about it, to that it's the same somatic expression in the body that happens when you're in a dark room completely by yourself and you hear someone walk in. Like that, wow. Feeling. So there is a somatic reaction to what's happening on social media, but it does curate that escapism that is pulling people out of their bodies as well. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think that we've gotten to a point in our culture where we are so disembodied and burnt out. And, you know, there's more conversations happening in the mainstream about this, which I think is great. But we continue to be in these cycles that curate more disembodiment, where yoga and mindfulness are practical tools that we can do. You can do it while you're making your pasta. You can do it while you're making your coffee. You could do it when you shower. Like, just these little techniques that can really bring us back home to ourselves and reclaim our sense of regulation, but also self-knowing and self-identity, which I think is yes. huge.
You've already hinted at, how do you thread some of these techniques, these yoga techniques, these mindfulness techniques, into day-to-day life? Many people think, as you said, you got to go somewhere to do this, rather than your practice of life should yeah. be doing this.
Yeah, let's start with breaking down what is the traits of yoga. And this is for those who are curious. When you look at so many different styles out there, it's like ice cream flavors, right? You might like one, not like the other. But the question that is naturally provoked from that is, how do you actually do research on yoga? Because if there's so many different styles, like, how do we know that is, you know, there's just so many different variables. So what they've done to identify variables that are common among all styles of yoga is to identify the traits of yoga. And the traits of yoga is movement, breath, relaxation, and welcoming presence. So when I bring those four things into anything I do, I'm cultivating all those benefits we're hearing about of yoga. And that's why I said, like, rock climbing can be yoga, honestly. So when we look in our day-to-day life, let's say that I'm making my tea, right? And I like to use a French press. I have a weird way of doing it, but it's like it's a process, right? And as I am like picking and moving, I'm feeling my body. I take a moment to smell the tea leaves, right? And I'm making this, I'm being present with it. I'm moving and I'm creating a relaxed state. I'm curious. It's when we cultivate or develop a curious, welcoming presence. I always say that if you want to dislodge fear, mm-hmm. deploy curiosity, mm-hmm. because when you start getting curious, you're in a welcoming state. You're not so reactive. So it could even be when you're in the shower, right? Take a big breath in And as you exhale, just feel the water on your skin. That's going to disrupt negative feedback loops by paying attention to the sensory awareness.
Yes.
You can feel your feet on the ground, right? And just being in this co-creative relationship where you're releasing the belief that you need to have an hour, like truly 1 minute, 2 minute, 3 minute, 6 minutes. It doesn't matter. In fact, they've done a research show with meditation that you get just as much benefit with 5 minutes a day to one time 20 minutes a week. So little bits throughout the day, same with yoga. You know, if you're doing 5-10 minutes of mobility, it could be before you go to bed at night where you just get some twists. And I always encourage people, a place to start is, do you move your spine every day? Gentle back bend, gentle forward fold, twisting to the right, to the left, lateral bend, just to the side, every day. Just do that, like, and it takes less than a minute. And maybe you, in time, as you start to play with how it feels in your body, you begin to luxuriate into it a little more, and it turns into a 5-minute stretch, and it feels good. And we're creating those new neuromuscular patterns, so we can use this, whether it's simple things like that, to just bring it into how you do your day-to-day.
That reminds me of my dad. You know the story, John, that he was super worried of me doing yoga. He thought that was a weird thing that I was going to practice. And then he was having back pain, and he went to a doctor, and the doctor gave him some exercises to do at night before going to bed. He just had to be quiet, relax, do the exercises. And when I saw him doing it, I'm like, you are doing yoga now, Dad.
That's so funny you say that. Almost, I guess, 10 years ago, when I was in Fayetteville, North Carolina, I worked with a physical therapy clinic as a yoga therapist. And we were teaching breath work, and I was leading classes for that maintenance after their recovery. Yeah. But in addition, I was taking PT homework and turning it into breath-centric sequences, because a lot of times it can just be monotonous movement.
Yeah.
But if you just add breath and you get curious about, I mean, if I even had you right now open your hands and really stretch out your hand, you're going to feel sensation. It's starting to learn sensation in our body and feel. But now people are more present versus disassociating in quick monotonous movements. So yeah, we like taking it to physical therapy, absolutely,
yes.
You know?
Now that we're talking about yoga, you're offering us a completely different perspective of what many people think when they think of yoga. How do you see the future of yoga, yoga therapy, you know, mindfulness, integrative care?
Well, it's a really exciting time because I believe in 2014, when integrative medicine really came on the scene, they have now declared that yoga is one of the modalities within integrative medicine. And so we're seeing this as adjunct, whether it is for lifestyle medicine and proactive health, to being a maintenance plan working clinically. So let's say someone has high lipids, high cholesterol, and then their provider says, okay, if you're in that pre-disease for diabetes, doing these practices, and it's not necessarily going to a studio because, you know, it's more of do these practices at home, or here's a treatment plan, or here's a recovery plan, a regulation plan. So you're seeing this stuff being included as adjunct in clinics to literally being recommended and prescribed, so to speak, by providers. I think we're going to see with the yoga therapy industry and yoga and mindfulness world, or mind-body medicine, all that stuff, I think we're going to see it come on the scene the way, you know, in the 1930s, physical therapy happened, and then chiropractic, massage. Like, we're going to see this work as more evidence is proving the efficacy. Mm-hmm. We're going to see licensed providers coming out of this. We're going to see more academic institutions embracing education around this, and more providers utilizing this stuff because it's so cost effective. It's accessible anywhere, like I just said, the shower or, you know, at home. And it's evidence-based. So it's a really exciting time to see where this stuff goes in medicine.
Yes.
Yeah. I recently had an opportunity to talk with a rehabilitation physician at one of our local colleges. And she was talking about how she introduced yoga to the football team there. And initially, it was totally voluntary. And initially, a few people showed up, and most people thought it was ridiculous. And then a few more showed up, and then most of the people showed up. And then they came to her shortly after that and said, you know, we only get to do this once a week. Is there any way that we can do this twice a week? And so it's clearly one of those things that once you try it and understand the power, then it's something you can't see yourself not doing for the rest of your life. really.
Well, people, I think, are so tired of feeling sick and tired. And when you experience something that feels good and you're also getting the benefits, like for athletes, mobility, resilience, mindset. I mean, there's so many benefits that can
focus,
come.
Yeah, all those.
Yeah, it's going to be something. I mean, with the military, for example, applying recovery skills into, they're so go, go, go that it's increasing injury risk. We're having retention issues. I mean, the list goes on the metrics and the issues. Yoga and mindfulness, it helps soldiers really be able to utilize what I love to refer as is the human weapon system to stay regulated, to really, I mean, when we think about prevention of disease and illness, but the mental health stuff too.
Yes.
So it's kind of this all in one. I heard a quote years ago that said, if the promise of yoga was in a pill, it'd be the best selling medication worldwide.
Yes.
But I think, like you just pointed out, it's getting started. And when we have context, the reason I'm an educator is because, one, like I said, the yoga industry in the West has done a horrible job at socializing the accessibility of this. And when we understand the context and why we're using it, because if you want to use it for sleep hygiene, you would do more restorative, or there's different breath techniques that can help with that. Whereas if you're trying to do it because you're wanting to increase human performance, there's other techniques for that. Mm-hmm. And so when you have context and the why and what, then we're most likely to do it versus, you know, why am I doing this?
Yeah. And that brings us back to awareness. We need to be able to see why we're doing this. What do we need? We sometimes don't even know what we need. And so we don't know what to use, what to engage in.
Well, in a world where we have access to so much information, it's wild to see humans struggle with access to themselves.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, you know, when we develop that relationship with ourselves, self-awareness, and even just like I said earlier, what's good for my nervous system? You can go and do yoga, but you can take these traits and use it in parenting. You can use it in taking breaks when you're studying for something. Like, you can trickle this throughout our life. It's a human birthright. You know, this is accessible within. It's free. It's just having the awareness about it and then allowing yourself to hold the duality of this is difficult or this is weird. Like, yeah, it's weird because it's countercultural. Like, stillness is weird for the U.S. So you're not alone. You're not bad at it. And just learning to be in relationship with it and curious with it.
So, Melissa, this has been really great. I know Adriana and I could talk for hours about this with you. And certainly you've talked about a lot of really neat ideas and practices. We like to leave our audience with one thing that they may be able to try in their daily lives to kind of start them on a pathway. Do you have, and we like to call these pebbles, things that, you know, that are create ripples. Is there one thing that you would tell us that we could try as a pebble to understand some of these practices?
Well, as long as you're not driving right now, I would invite, take your hands. You can just bring your hands together. Interlace your fingers and just rotate your wrist. And let's take a moment, like pop your knuckles, like feel the feels of this experience, like the stretch of the hands, and just take a big breath.
My knuckles aren't popping. I don't know if that means I'm not flexible.
My wrists are popping.
Yeah, get some circulation. Take a big breath in. Big sigh out. And you could do that 3 times. You could do it once. But this is just a way, get in the body to feel, to ground. And they joke that the flexibility of our hands represents the flexibility of our mind. This is why in yoga there's mudras, right? And that has to do with parasympathetic fibers. We won't go there today, but just know there's a whole thing about those as well. So the hands, and we have the most sensory input in our hands. So if by doing things like this, you could just do this throughout your day, you're beginning your practice. You're beginning to yield those benefits.
Wonderful.
Super simple, super easy. Melissa, thank you so, so much. I really think this is going to be one of those episodes that our residents and fellows and anybody that is listening can really put into practice. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Ripples Physicians Wellbeing is made possible by the Joe R. and Teresa Lozano Long School of Medicine Office for Graduate Medical Education. To contact us or learn more about the Wellness Home, visit gmewellness.utesca.edu.
This podcast is inspired by the Dalai Lama's powerful quote, "Just as ripples spread out when a single pebble is dropped into water, the actions of individuals can have far-reaching effects. We provide physicians with pebbles, tangible and actionable practices that can help make positive impacts in their personal and professional lives.